This is a 720 to go podcast from Chicago's WGN Radio 720.
This podcast is sponsored by ADM.
As one of the world's largest agricultural processors, ADM is uniquely positioned to serve the world's growing needs for abundant food and renewable energy. ADM.
When it comes to the business of America's farmland, you need the information from the people who know it best. That's why we bring you AgriCast with Orion Samuelson and Max Armstrong.
Thank you very much, David, and good week to you, my friend, as we take a look at what's happening in the world here on the 21st of October. And again, the question keeps being asked, where did this summer go? It really disappeared. But still, we have a lot of growth going on. And yesterday, driving in McHenry County, again, saw a lot of cornfields still standing as farmers continue to let Mother Nature dry down the crop and save some money on propane gas that they would normally use to dry down the crop. So good morning to you here in the Midwest, around the world, with all the technology we have with our broadcast equipment today. And we're going to be checking in with somebody that we haven't visited with for a long time. Well, two people, actually. Richard Brock of Brock Associates, based in Milwaukee. Over the decades, he and I have appeared on a lot of programs together. We were adding it up, and I think it's about four decades that we have been on programs with Richard discussing market conditions and prices and all that. It's going to be good to have him back on as he sat down with Max Armstrong in our studio this week and shared some of his thoughts on what's happening with this ongoing unusual weather year. But as I've said often, no such thing as normal weather anymore. It's always abnormal, it seems. And then Norm Braxick, who was in the seed corn business for years, who I met at Farm Progress Show decades ago when he was, as part of the promotion for Farm Progress Show, giving rides on hot air balloons at the Farm Progress Show. But he's retired from that and gone into an area that deals with finding ways to develop the equipment and the technology to help people in developing countries learn how to do agriculture and feed themselves. So I think we have a few interesting things to talk about this morning here at... we're not too far away from Halloween, so I'll give you some interesting notes on the Halloween pumpkins. And it's a good year for pumpkins, and particularly here in Illinois, which is far and away the number one pumpkin-producing state in the United States. So all of that coming up here on this Saturday morning show, and standing by is Mr. Braxick. We'll check with him when we continue on the Saturday morning show. This morning, I reconnect with a longtime friend. He's Norm Braxick, who I met for the first time when he was with a seed company at Farm Progress Show giving rides in hot air balloons. But that was years ago, Norm, and good to hook up with you once again, and I hope everything is well.
Everything is well, Orion. It's great to hear your voice again and great to connect with you.
Well, the subject is Foods Resource Bank, because in addition to being involved in the seed corn industry, you were always concerned about people not as fortunate as we are in this country. So give me a little history of the Foods Resource Bank, and then we'll talk about a big event coming up tomorrow in Michigan.
Well, thank you. We've been very blessed over the last 16 years now. This idea first got started in Western Canada in the early 60s and became organized and became the Canadian Food Grains Bank in 1985. And basically our denominations would go to Canada, and here it's working so well up there. It was, why don't we try to do it in the U.S.? And so in 1998, that's when the idea first got started here in the United States. We got organized by the year 2000, and we actually did our first what we call growing projects here in the United States in 2000.
Now, this is a partnership of churches of various denominations and their members in rural communities, and they initially hooked up with congregations in urban areas. Tell me about that.
Well, that's still our basic model. We twin our partner, city churches, urban, suburban churches, with those in the rural area. We are comprised now of 16 denominational members and their implementing arms. And they do actually food security programs around the world. We don't ship any grain. We don't ship any food. Our niche basically is to help people in the developing world to feed themselves.
So, and you do that with funds through the crops grown by your volunteers.
That's right. The city churches basically raise $200 to $300 an acre to cover the costs not donated. And then we partner with rural congregations, actually with individual rural farmers, landowners. And the basic model is that we get land from a lot of sources. Farmers farm it. We get donations of probably now 90% of our seeds donated. We get a lot of herbicide, insecticides that are needed, that are donated. We do take some of the city money to cover those costs that we don't get donated. And one of the big items is fertilizer. We get some of the crop, maybe the starter donated, but not all of the crop. And so some of the urban-suburban money is used in that direction. But the idea is that all of the money that we take at harvest is actually used to implement these programs overseas. And again, it's helping people to produce their own food. I know right now with a lot of disasters around the world, there's a big emphasis on putting in food and putting in water, and that is needed right now. But long term, 70% of the world's hungry live on farms that are 2.5 acres or less. And if we can solve that problem at the grassroots level by helping them to feed themselves and their families with extra to share or to barter or to sell in local and regional markets, it just solves a lot of problems. And so that's basically what we've been able to do over the last 15 years.
Over the years, I've had the opportunity to attend several of your gatherings at harvest time on farms in the Midwest, and have always enjoyed that. But tomorrow, you've got an event in Michigan that's a little extra special. Tell me about that.
Well, we do. This is the 15th year of a project that we have between Portage United Church of Christ and five rural churches, one being Mennonite, three being Methodist, and one being a community church. And this will be celebrating our 15th year. In that period of time, the city church has raised $262,000 in what I would call extra mile giving. It's not a part of the church budget. It's people supporting acres, in our case, $200 an acre, to cover the costs that we don't get donated. And we are now on, we've got 25 partners. We're on 12 different farms, 225 acres. And this project in the first 15 years has just generated $1,508,000 for World Hunger.
And you're celebrating that tomorrow. What's going to happen on the farm? Well, is it Climax, Michigan?
It's Climax, Michigan. It's a farm. It's a very generous person there who has an airstrip down the middle of it, and we have 46 acres on either side that we have been able to farm for the last 10 years now. He says, farm it like you own it, and that's what our farmers have done. And he also has a shelter house. Well, it's a place for a couple of airplanes there. So he pulls the airplanes out, and we use that as a shelter house for our harvest celebration. Nice event. We'll have probably five combines in the field as we harvest the field. We'll have entertainment. We've got petting zoos for the kids. We do offer combine rides, and it's a great way for city moms and dads and kids to experience an American harvest. Their minds are blown away by yield monitors and the kinds of things that go with American farming today. So we have a lot of people that are Farm Bureau members that say it's the best thing they've ever done for rural urban connections.
Well, I know how great it is, and the people and organizations that you have attracted. When will all of this start? What time, and how long can visitors come to the event tomorrow?
Well, we start out there at 1 o'clock, and basically it doesn't take long to get through 46 acres. We tell the combine drivers this is not a race, you know, because we want to get as many people in their combine as possible, but usually it goes from 3:30 to 4 o'clock in the afternoon, and so it's a good afternoon. People enjoy it, but they see all that grain going into a couple of semis out there, knowing that will be sold here locally, and the resulting money will be used to fund these programs overseas.
A great organization, one that I've helped a little bit to promote over the years, and certainly wish you well on the event that will give kids and their parents an opportunity to actually ride in a combine. So Climax, Michigan, I'm not familiar with that geography. What part of the state would it be?
Well, it would be right near Battle. It'd be between Battle Creek and Kalamazoo. And the address is actually 13385 East P Avenue, 13385 East P Avenue in Climax, Michigan, 1 o'clock. And if anyone is interested in starting a like project at your church or in your community, this is the best way to find out firsthand from the farmers and the people who support this project. So please come join us.
All right. I'm sorry I won't be able to be there, but other activities are going to keep me at home, because having an airstrip on the farm would have been just great. I could have flown in. Are you still flying hot air balloons?
No, we're not. The balloon's in the box, as far as I know, you know.
Okay. Well, Norm, good to hook up with you again, and have a great day tomorrow celebrating a special event of the Foods Resource Bank. More to come here on the Saturday Morning Show. And Lou Manfredini, the helpful gentleman who works at ACE and WGN, a little bit later this morning. And you know, he's right. Do you remember the days when you'd walk into an ACE hardware store, buy a 40-watt, 60-watt, or a 100-watt bulb, and that was very simple? Boy, it's not a simple thing anymore to buy a light bulb. So you can depend on Lou to help, because he helps everybody who has any questions on what to do with all the gadgets we have, and, of course, to take care of our home. So thank you, Lou, for that. I want to send out congratulations this morning to Ed McMillan. Ed McMillan, a farm boy from Illinois who went on to become president, CEO, and director of Purina Mills, and very active in professional and civic boards particularly. The gentleman is one of the honorees for the 2018 Order of Lincoln, and that is the state's most prestigious honor for professional achievement and public service. He currently serves as chairman of the University of Illinois Board of Trustees. He's been an active member in the University of Illinois Alumni Association, serving as the chairman for 2 years and a member of the board of directors since 2009. So he'll be honored a little bit later this year as one of the honorees of the 2018 Order of Lincoln. Congratulations to Ed. Some developments in the ethanol area this week getting attention. And the National Corn Growers Association, in a letter to seven senators on Thursday, EPA Administrator Scott Pruitt took significant strides toward strengthening the foundation for ethanol and renewable fuels. The administrator emphasized his commitment to implementing renewable fuel volumes at or above levels proposed, as well as to examining the agency's authority to fix regulations that currently limit the year-round sale of E15 and higher ethanol blends. Administrator Pruitt late in the week said the agency would not pursue regulations to change the treatment of RINs relative to ethanol exports, a proposal that the corn growers say would have undermined the integrity of the program and certainly had an impact on lowering exports of ethanol from the United States. It's been so interesting watching the development of what started out in the 1970s as gasohol and then became ethanol, and then we added to that soy diesel and other sources of energy besides the petroleum industry. Petroleum industry didn't like that, of course, because it would take some market away from them. And so they have somewhat been strong opponents to ethanol and its development here in the United States. It's now a major industry that has revitalized a lot of cities and towns in rural America by bringing ethanol plants into the community and providing cleaner air and providing another source of energy that makes us less dependent on the petroleum sources in the Middle East, where a lot of oil is produced by countries who generally don't like us. So glad to see that development coming out of the EPA with Administrator Scott Pruitt this week. Thank you very much. We're at 25 minutes before 6 o'clock. Coming up, we'll talk markets, Maxwell, with Richard Brock of Brock Associates, based in Milwaukee. So stay with us for that. And right now, we say welcome to Samuelson Says, sponsored by Wink Products Company, makers of quality specialty cleaning products since 1947. I'm Orion Samuelson, and I'll try not to make anybody angry this week on Samuelson Says, because I'm going to talk about pumpkins, the Halloween pumpkin time of the year, and we'll be with you to talk pumpkins after this.
If you're frustrated by slow drains, or if you find yourself standing in water when you take a shower, the cause could be hair and soap scum buildup. Well, speed up your drains and solve your problem with Wink Hair Clog Blaster. Don't call the plumber. Pick up Wink Hair Clog Blaster instead. Wink Hair Clog Blaster, it does the job for you. Be sure to check out all the products offered by visiting their website at Wink, W-H-I-N-K, wink.com.
Time to talk pumpkins, because before you know it, Halloween will be here. And, of course, we're seeing pumpkins and jack-o'-lanterns pop up in yards all over the area. But the pumpkin is an interesting plant, so I'm going to spend time talking about it rather than a topic that'll make somebody angry and question my intelligence level and all that. 1.5 billion pounds of pumpkin are produced each year in the United States, and about 95% of that pumpkin crop is grown in Illinois. Some questions about pumpkins. Well, pumpkins are technically fruit, and there are 45 different varieties of pumpkins. They were discovered in Central America. That's where they were first grown. And 80% of the pumpkin crop in the United States is available during October. The world's largest pumpkin pie, more than 5 feet in diameter and weighed over 1,800 pounds. And the largest pumpkin pie, or I should say that's the pumpkin, but the largest pumpkin pie ever baked weighed a little over a ton. And pumpkin pie originated in the colonies, but not as we know it today. Colonists would cut the tops of pumpkins off, remove the seeds, and fill the pumpkins with milk, spices, and honey, and then bake them in hot ashes. And that was the beginning of the pumpkin pie, which, interestingly enough, is not America's favorite pie. Some of the other, well, bits of information about pumpkins, they're grown primarily for processing. Small percentage grown for ornamental sales through U-Pick farms and farmers markets and retail sales. Pumpkin seeds can be roasted as a snack. Pumpkins contain potassium and vitamin A. Pumpkins are used for feed for animals. Pumpkin flowers are edible. As a matter of fact, everything about the pumpkin indeed is edible. And in early colonial times, pumpkins were used as an ingredient for the crust of pies, not the filling. And here's one that I like. Pumpkins were once recommended for removing freckles and for curing snake bites. Pumpkins, incidentally, are 90% water. So enjoy your jack-o'-lantern. Enjoy your pumpkin pie. Enjoy the Halloween celebration that'll be going on now. Oh, and one other point. The farmers markets particularly are doing a lot of work to provide fun for the family at Halloween time. And so, Tom's Market is close to where I live in Algonquin, Illinois, not too far from our house. And they've put in a lot of work preparing things that kids can do that the entire family can do together. So get out and enjoy the Halloween season on one of those farmers markets. And you'll also have the opportunity to visit some corn mazes in the community. It's a fun time for family and the kids, so enjoy. My thoughts on Samuelson Says, a presentation of Tribune Radio Networks. Standing by, Max Armstrong with a special guest to talk markets when we continue here on the Saturday Morning Show.
Visit with us a bit about the ag markets this weekend, Richard Brock from Brock Associates. Welcome to the studio, sir.
Max, it's great to be here.
It's a pleasure to have you with us and to look over the landscape here during a late harvest season. Between rains, we're trying to get as much done as we possibly can, but is it your feeling the weekly crop bulletins on Monday will show us maybe even a little bit farther behind in this harvest?
Actually, you know, combines and shellers in the Midwest have been running very strong this week, and a lot of people got in field. So I think we'll play a game of catch-up here. But, you know, a lot of people are in no real big hurry. There's no forecast of concerning weather coming in the next two or three weeks. And so it's still going to be behind where we were a year ago and the five-year average, but we're going to catch up quite a bit this week.
Standability seems to be pretty good for the most part, does it not? I mean, I haven't heard many reports of corn getting down.
I have not heard of any down corn anywhere, even in areas, you know, in the western states where you get high winds. None of our clients in Nebraska are reporting any kind of downed corn at all. And even up in the Dakotas, same thing. Everything's holding up well.
The moisture rate on that corn has been stubbornly high, I think, for some, from the reports we've seen. So there's a tendency to let it dry down in the field,
yeah,
I guess.
Yeah, and there is a lot of that. And, yeah, for this time of year, it's unusual to see moisture readings still in the 20s. I mean, normally we'd be in the low 20s. There's still some 24, 25% corn out there. And so it gets a little expensive drying that down.
I was visiting with a grain elevator operator the other day in Indiana, and he said, yeah, you know, the bean prices aren't very exciting, but he said, we're getting some very good yields coming across the scales. And I said, what's very good? He said, well, there's a lot of 58, 62 bushel beans in this area. Those isolated reports of 80, but he said around 60 bushels, nobody's terribly disappointed.
Yeah, that's true. And you get further west, the yields are a lot higher. I mean, there are a lot of 75 bushel plus beans in Iowa. Illinois, the good areas, again, some very high soybean yields. We're also seeing some really, really high corn yields. Some of our clients are saying, yeah, my bean yields are okay, but my corn yields are off the charts. A lot of 240, 250 bushel corn. One of our associates that runs our Minnesota office farms a couple thousand acres on the side, and he's running 250 bushel corn. This is in south central Minnesota. And he said, I've never had corn like this. So, yeah, I think we're going to have overall be able to match or actually be a little bit higher than the last USDA report on total yields. There's not going to be any huge surprises on the downside anyway.
Both corn and beans could come up, you think, in the November report?
Yeah, but not a lot. You know, I think when you take a look at the soybean yields, we believe in the final average will end up around 51. I think the USDA is at 49 and change. And in the corn, we're still looking at 172. I don't know that we'll exceed that, and that's just pretty close to what the USDA is at right
They're not
now.
Quite there yet, are they?
No, they're 171.8, so yeah, they're pretty close.
I read with interest some of your comments in Feedstuffs here sometime in a recent issue, and you plotted the lows for the year when they're generally set in the grain market. And we're in that time frame, aren't we?
Yeah, I think we probably made the bottoms in the August-September time frame. You know, markets bottom on bearish news, and then they're going to sit there. It's just right now, Max, it's hard to imagine where the bullish news is going to come to turn this thing around. We've got huge supplies. You got corn supplies, carryovers over 2 billion bushels, and soybeans over 400 million bushels. I mean, that's puts a ceiling in the market. So I think, you know, what we're hoping for, what a farmer can hope for, is we're building a demand base. And demand comes slowly, but it does happen. Laws of economics have not been repealed. You keep the price of corn and beans low, well, we start using more of it. Look at what's happening in our livestock numbers, poultry and pork. Numbers going up. Demand's increasing worldwide. But exports are really behind a year ago. And so, you know, I think a lot of people are going to be counting on China coming around and buying corn to fulfill their statements that they're going to try to get to a 10% ethanol blend by 2020. And if you look at the numbers on it, that's almost impossible to do. They don't have the plants that can build. They can't build enough plants that quickly to produce that much ethanol. It's going to take, due to our math, we think about 1.38 billion bushels of corn to get there. And they've already said, yeah, we're going to get there, but we're not going to buy any corn from anybody. We're not going to buy ethanol from anyone. Well,
it
doesn't work out, no. And so, you know, what concerns us right now is, will we ramp up corn production thinking that we're going to get this demand from China? And yet, they're telling us they're not going to give it to us. They're not going to buy our corn. And so, you know, and whenever we get to low prices, and this has been going on for the last 3 years, your producers, we just want to ramp up production. Rather than improving marketing skills, the idea is, well, I'm not making enough money, so I got to grow more of it. It's like a dairy farmer. If he's making money, he adds cows. If he's losing money, he adds more cows. You know, that's just the way we are. It's the way the cycles work. But it's also the reason we get long, flat bottoms in a market, because we ramp up production when prices get cheap.
Don't producers respond more, though, Richard, to the economics of the moment rather than I'd love to give my producer friends more credit than this, but I think several of them that I know aren't that far-sighted, looking on down the road, anticipating the demand that it may be coming. We've got to live in the here and now, looking at the prices we have right now.
Yeah, I think everybody's right now worried about the cash flow in the next 6 months. Where's my money going to come from to put in next year's crop? And, you know, some producers, when you put on these extra bushels, are actually going to have a pretty good year. I think we're going to see farm incomes overall pretty solid this year. Pork producers are going to do well. Beef guys are doing well. But you look at these corn and soybean yields, and, you know, Max, if you take 220 bushel corn and take it to 250, you've got an extra 30 bushels per acre, even at 320 a bushel. You know, that's a pretty significant increase in cash flow. And so when you start putting a pencil to it, I think we're going to have a good year. Most producers are going to have a good year. But we, you know, Central Illinois corn prices right now are basically under 320 a bushel. And, you know, very few people are breaking even at 320. We need to get that up to 340, 350. And I think we'll see a lot of corn come to market if we get this cash market back to 350. And farmers are going to be really tight holders of corn right now. You know, they moved the old crop. A lot of people hang on to the old crop way too long, dumped it in August. That put the bottom in the market. And now, so you've got a lot of empty storage space for this new crop to come in. And once those bin doors are closed, they're going to stay closed, I think, until after January. And so that'll allow some basis improvements. And we think the next decent opportunity for marketing corn and beans probably won't come until the middle of December. And we think, you know, we do not want to be a seller of greens at these prices.
I can't help but think of your years of experience doing what you do back over well over four decades. You've seen this movie before, haven't you? Producers holding on too long, as was the case with the corn market this summer.
Yeah, it's interesting. I had another reporter that you and I have known for years. I'm not mentioning her name. She says, you know, I could pull your articles that you wrote 40 years ago for Farm Futures magazine and rerun them today and just change the prices. And I said, you know, you're right, because the one thing that never changes is human nature. I said, you know, farmers are the same today as they were 40 years ago. Most of them don't enjoy marketing, and so they continue to make the same mistakes year in and year out. You know, they're farmers because they want to be in production. And this is a different mindset when it comes to marketing. Totally different mindset than very good. You can take a producer who's an excellent producer, and more times than not, they're not going to be a real good marketer. And some of our clients, the best marketers, are actually not the biggest producers. And so either enjoy the marketing end or you don't enjoy it. And it's like everything else in life, Max. If you don't enjoy it, you're not going to spend time at it, and you're not going to become real proficient at it. And that hasn't changed. I mean, it's the same thing. But, you know, these cycles in the grains are very predictable. And, you know, we could be down here and making these bottoms for another 2-3 years. The cycle high in 2012 we thought was very predictable. And people don't like you being right when you're when you're recommending bearish moves. I mean, right. One of the worst articles I ever wrote was in February 13, when corn was 850, and I said, get ready for $4 corn. Oh, you thought, you know, I would have dropped a bomb someplace. You know, people don't like to hear that kind of news. And so, yeah, that never changes.
How bearish is the countryside? How pervasive is it out there? And sometimes I think maybe I'm not talking to the right people. Maybe I'm not out enough. I'm at a lot of meetings, and I know a lot of growers, and I talk to them every day. I don't sense pervasive bearishness. Am I not talking to the right people?
Yeah, I think everybody's very optimistic. You know, the people who were not as good of a business manager, they've already gone on to other occupations in the last 3 years. I mean, we've lost several producers, okay, for various reasons. Plus, the other thing that's happening in the countryside right now, you know, there are a lot of farmers out there that are your age and my age, okay, and they're saying, you know, now their sons are taking over. So we're seeing a huge transition take place age-wise right now, because you go back 15, 20 years ago when farming wasn't as profitable, a lot of people didn't go back to the farm. Now people have come back to the farm in the last 10 years. And so we're seeing a big change there. But the ones that are there now, like I said, they're making money. They've got a good asset base. Farmland values are very strong still. I think auctions this winter, people are going to be surprised how strong these auction sales are going to be, particularly in the Western Corn Belt, in Iowa, Nebraska, and Illinois. We're going to see some very strong prices. And so I think everybody's optimistic. You know, our old friend John Martin used to say, bad times don't cause business failures. They expose them. And what we're going through right now is your opportunity to grow in a farm business is during times like this, not in 2012 and 13, where everybody's making money. The good business managers look at this as probably the best opportunity. I have said many times in speeches, it reminds me of 1985 and 86, when you could actually buy farmland in Indiana and it would cash flow the year you bought it. Now, you can't do that now. We've never done it since, but we're as close as you're ever going to get to it, I believe. And so, you know, these are great opportunities, particularly for younger farmers who are wanting to expand. Your risk on the downside is very small now. Your risk on the downside in 2012 and 13 was huge. And so you expand when the risk is small.
Richard, I've enjoyed reading your comments over the years and following you, and it's great to have you in the studio with us this weekend. Thank you.
It's great to be here, Max.
Richard Brock, Richard Brock Associates, Milwaukee, Wisconsin.
Well, next week I'll be in Indianapolis with about 64,000 other people. They'll be wearing blue jackets, both men and women, because it's time for the 90th annual convention of the National FFA Organization. More than 64,000 from across the U.S., all 50 states, Puerto Rico, and the Virgin Islands expected to attend. And the membership in FFA continues to grow, announcing the record membership numbers for this year, 653,359 FFA members, 8,568 FFA chapters, more than 344,000 FFA alumni members, and 2,051 FFA alumni chapters. The theme of the convention this year, I Can, We Will. David Townsend, who is president of the National FFA, said FFA members know that individually they can make a difference, but together they are stronger and have a louder voice. And the National FFA Convention and Expo gives members the opportunity to learn from one another on how we can continue to grow leaders, strengthen agriculture, and build our communities. The words of National FFA President David Townsend, a student at the University of Delaware. So Wednesday it gets underway, and it concludes Saturday evening about 5 with the introduction of the new National FFA officer team, and I'll be there for the full time covering it gavel to gavel on RFD TV. And then, interestingly enough, 2 weeks from today, it's Kansas City for the Agriculture Future of America, intended more for college students than FFA high school students. And so I'm going to be getting my battery charged a great deal over the next 2 weeks with the FFA and the AFA, and I do look forward to it. Well, thanks to Bob Ferguson for making sure it all worked to get me on the air this morning. Thanks to you for listening wherever you are on the planet. As we hit 6 o'clock on this Saturday morning on Chicago's very own 720 WGN Chicago and WGNRadio.com.
Orion Samuelson keeps you connected to the world of business and agriculture on WGN. Hear his reports weekday mornings on The Steve Cochran Show and during the noon hour on the Wintrust Business Lunch. Plus, catch Orion and Max on Saturday mornings at 5 a.m. only on Chicago's WGN Radio 720.